I'd like to settle down, but they won't let me. A fugitive must be a rolling stone. Down every road there's always one more city. I'm on the run, the highway is my home.
All right, everybody, hi, welcome, happy new year, all of the appropriate, that is January 15th, I guess, is it still authorized to be telling people happy new year? We're kicking off the new year here tonight on Talkin' Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken. And as it is, well, sort of their season three of Talkin' Fugitive, they're going to be talking about season three of The Fugitive tonight. Wings of an Angel will be the program we're going to discuss. If you want to discuss it with them live, 800-407-KSAV. Or email during the program, talk@ksav.org. All right, we will have the leader of the Three Musketeers, Bob Neer, to start things off. So, Bob, welcome to Season 3.
Thank you, Dave, and Happy New Year to you. It seems like forever since we were last on the air. I can't imagine how Richard Kimball managed to survive with Alice. And so, here we are back on the air and ready to begin Season 3, as you said. In my opinion, far and away the best season of the series, although other people have a different opinion about that. We've already discussed on the radio several classics from this season, like Landscape with Running Figures and Wife Killer, but we have several more to go, and that includes the very first of the season, Wings of an Angel. The producers may not have had a clue how to end each season with a cliffhanger episode, but they sure knew how to begin them, and this is typical. A very good story, very highly rated by our membership. Kitty gave it a 9, I gave it 9.5, and Ken gave it a 10. Actually, there's nothing remarkable about this basic story. The Fugitive comes from the start with one basic place to begin. That is, put Kimmel in some sort of impossible place, and then challenge him to escape. We've seen that many times, all the way back to North Oak in Season 1, with Kimmel behind bars in a small town and no way to get out. That happens here as well, but great acting and especially a plausible story make it work. Kimball finds himself traveling on a bus when suddenly some lawmen get on. They're looking for a suspect, and right away you figure it must be Kimball. But it's not. It's another guy on the bus who promptly whips out a knife and holds it at the throat of a woman passenger and then heads for the emergency exit to get away. Problem is, Kimball is sitting right in the way at that door. And that puts him in the middle of the action. Kimmel and the escapee and the woman all tumble out of the bus, and Kimmel is the one who gets the knife. He survives, but the injury is serious enough that he needs immediate surgery, and the closest hospital just happens to be at a local prison, and that's where they take him. But before we go on with the story, I want to ask Ken a question. In his review of Landscape with Running Figures, he took Kimmel to task in the scene where he and Marie Girard get on a bus together. She's already on, she's looking out the window, doesn't see him when he gets on, but Kimball heads right to the very back of the bus, where he promptly begins to nod off. Ken warned him about getting trapped back there and the need to stay awake and alert. He even referenced this current episode. So I went back in our file section to read Ken's remarks, and here are a few of them from the review of Landscape. The bus scene was amazing. One problem I had with Kimball getting on the bus. Did you notice that he sat in the last row? Hard to escape. Then he went to sleep. I know he was tired, but he needs to stay awake and look out for the police. Fugitive rule number one. It would be better to sit near an exit on the bus. You never know when a police roadblock will be set up. Remember, Kimball got caught on the bus in Wings of an Angel. So my question to Ken is, what should he do? Here we have him sitting at the emergency exit, so if someone comes to get him, he at least has a chance. But if there is a real emergency, that puts him right in the middle of it and brings all the attention his way, something he doesn't need. What's the answer? Seek out the emergency exit, sit in the front, just take whatever is available, or stay off buses and hit the road. Ken?
Well, as a fugitive, Kimball just seems to get into trouble wherever he goes. I think it was a great episode, I agree with you. And, you know, we've seen him try hitching rides, you know, in cars, and sometimes someone shoots at the car, or he gets kidnapped by someone who's driving a car, and then we see him on a bus, and you never know when a roadblock or maybe a police car is trailing and hailing it to turn over, you know, pull over. We've seen him on trains, and sometimes, you know, that's a headache. So I guess as a fugitive, what do you do? I think it was smart to sit near the emergency exit. And as far as jumping the girl, I agree. You know, if I was there, I would try to save the girl, too. Wouldn't you, Bob?
Well, we all know that Kim wasn't about to stay in there and let a woman get kidnapped.
Yeah.
He's not about to let her take the knife, so that's not going to happen. He's not about to mind his own business, so that's not going to happen. So, yeah, it's inevitable that he's going to be in the middle of it no matter what he does. Now, as far as getting on the bus is concerned, you don't always have a choice when you get on a bus. I haven't been on a bus in years, but if you're the nervous type and you need to sit near the exit because you think there's going to be an accident, you probably find that most of the time there's already somebody sitting there. I don't know that there's a real answer here because, like you said, trouble follows him wherever he goes, and chances are wherever he's sitting, it's probably a bad idea. I thought about him sitting in the front, but of course if he sits in the front, he's the first person that the cops will talk to. So that's no good either. So it's a no-win situation. The fact of the matter is it's risky to be on the bus in the first place. There are a couple other episodes, too, where cops get on the bus looking for somebody else. I don't remember the names of them. So it can be a very difficult situation. What do you think, Kitty?
Oh, I don't know. I think pretty much anywhere he sits on the bus, it's probably bad news for him. I mean, because after all, if you're on the bus, where is there really to run, regardless where you're sitting? I mean, the aisle is narrow. It's difficult to get off. I think
you're sitting
screwed
right next,
either way.
If you're sitting right next to the emergency door, you might be able to get it open and jump out, maybe. But you'd probably get killed in the process anyway. Probably wouldn't do any good. Well, whatever the answer is to that in this episode, this is what, of course, launches the entire thing. The fact that Kimball does interfere, as he always does, and he's the one who gets hurt. The woman gets saved, and she will have a chance to save him at the end of the episode. We'll get to that later. And Kimball's got to get to the hospital. So, you know, a lot of fugitive stories are far-fetched, admittedly. And, well, it's true of a lot of what's on TV. And it's hard to believe that things like that could happen. But I find this very plausible. I mean, here he is, and he's hurt, and he's got to get to the hospital right away, and we don't know where he is. He could be in the middle of nowhere. And they've got to get him there. So the nearest hospital, if you want to save the man's life, is in the prison. Now, most people wouldn't care. Just save my life. I don't care what you take me. Just do it and do it fast. In this case, he ends up being taken to a prison, and it's fascinating to see his reaction. When he's taken there, you almost get the feeling like a knife wound or not, he's going to get up and walk away. Anything would be better than going back to prison. And when he gets there, it doesn't take any time at all for him to be noticed by a couple of cons in there who apparently, somewhere along the line, were in the cell block with Kimball before he went to trial or while he was on trial. And this brings up another thing to me, which is... this is another instance in which we don't get to see something we might wonder about, which is what was Kimball like when he was in prison? Did he get along with the prisoners? Did they seek him out for medical advice? Was he respected? Was he? You never know. And we never get to see that because I don't think that he would have gotten any bail for a murder rap, so therefore he probably was in prison a long time. After all, O.J. Simpson was in prison quite a while, about a year or so, before the trial and while he was on trial. So we know that Kimball was, but of course we've never, ever seen a moment of that. Kitty, did you ever wonder about that, what Kimball might have been like in prison?
Yeah, actually, I have. And interestingly enough, in the remake of The Fugitive, they actually did one episode where you saw a flashback of him in jail with
right.
a cellmate.
Right.
And it's kind of unfortunate that we didn't see anything, you know, anything to the past here. I mean, they kind of plopped these two prisoners down like geraniums into this prison. And it might have been interesting to see what kind of interaction they had with Kimball in the other jail. I mean, did you know, you kind of wonder, well, did they did they dislike him? Is that why they're trying to get him to do something? I mean, because they got it in for him. But yeah, I think it certainly would have added to it if we could have seen, you know, at least maybe even one brief flashback of what happened.
One thing is for sure, he certainly is recognized right away. And he has the good fortune and the bad fortune in this episode. The bad fortune of running into these two guys who know him when they see him, and right away decide they're going to take advantage of that. But to be have a stronger contact with the trustee from the prison, one of the prisoners who's trusted, a trusted prisoner who's in there and is in a special position, and this prisoner is played by Greg Morris, who would soon find fame on Mission Impossible on TV. This is an excellent performance. It's very low-key. The trouble with his character is that he doesn't particularly like Kimball. He doesn't like cops. And he doesn't like the fact that Kimball saved the woman's life. Doesn't like any of that. So at the beginning, he doesn't treat him very well at all.
I saw him as being somebody that was just more out for himself.
Exactly.
He was going to do his time and do what he had to do in order to make parole and get out of there.
Exactly.
I don't think I got the impression that he just didn't really particularly care about anybody else. You know, his attitude was, "I have my own problems. You got yours."
And that's very understandable. At any rate, the two guys who recognized Kimball managed to managed to get a note to him that says, "Welcome, Doc Kimball." Well, what a shock that is! Now Kimball knows that there's somebody in the prison who knows that he's there. But it's not the cops, or he'd already be in trouble. They pass the note along to him, and then in I believe it's in either Act 1 or Act 2 at the beginning, we have what I called in my review a MacGuffin moment, which is right out of Alfred Hitchcock's movies, in which there's a piece of paper. It could be anything. It could be a piece of paper, microfilm, anything. It could be something in which people are looking for it in the story. And this piece of paper ends up in Kimball's hospital room with the warden, and it passes around from hand to hand. It's on the floor. It's in the trash can.
Yeah, that was actually kind of funny, if you ask me.
Yeah.
You know, I remember you and I talked about it. We were like, how come Kimball didn't just eat the piece of paper?
Well, yeah, and I said that in my review, too. Just put it in your mouth. Do something. Do anything. Instead, it's just moving around. But that's the kind of thing Hitchcock would always do, and he did it very effectively in a lot of movies. Sometimes the audience would know what it is everybody's thinking. Sometimes you wouldn't know. Sometimes it was important. Sometimes it wasn't important at all. And but it is, in a way, kind of amusing, but if the wrong person finds it, it's going to be a big trouble. Kimball is also confronted by some nosy reporters who want to know who he is and where he comes from and how he feels about being a hero, saving the woman's life. So Kimball's in a lot of trouble here, and this gives David Jansen a great opportunity to use all those facial mannerisms. He's obviously uncomfortable. He can't answer these questions. He doesn't want any part of this. He doesn't want to be the hero. He doesn't want his picture taken. Just like the Greg Morris's character, he simply wants to get out of there, and it's that simple. So this is a very good beginning to the story, and it shows the kind of discomfort. Ken, you could feel Kimball's discomfort, can you not?
Yes, great acting by Jansen. I put this episode in my top 10 of favorites, and you know, you notice there's no Gerard in this story,
right?
Yet I gave it a 10 rating. I'll tell you why. Because, you know, you have the initial bus scene, you have a dilemma, the girl is in peril, Kimball tries to save and gets stabbed. But then from there, when the story goes on, and you see Kimball's reaction when you get to the hospital, and he can't go anywhere because he's injured, and you see how Kimball is reacting, and you feel the same way as him. Oh no, last place I want to be. And then you know, the story keeps going and going. It really just kept my interest from every scene. You know, you jump to the little room there. Kimball's recovering. The girl comes in.
All right, Ken, we're going to have to jump to the little room. That's what we do when we take our brief timeouts, and we're going to take one right now because it's halfway through.
Okay.
Stick around, folks. We'll be back to talk some more Wings of an Angel, Talking Fugitive, here on Sheriff Vision Radio.
Hear the music you love from the past. All the memories you cherish will last. Listen and you'll agree, it's the place you wanna be. It's KSAV. Never far away, at work or at play. Hear the sounds that you love every day. We play the sounds of today and yesterday. So stay with KSAV. Whether on the go or in your home, you'll hear songs of yesterday. KSAV, we'll be with you to warm the day in every way. So share the music of KSAV. Listen to us, we know you'll agree. It's the place you want to be for songs that fill the day. It's KSAV. Stay with KSAV.
All right, and we're back talking fugitives. I want to remind everybody that immediately after this program is going to be a KSAV special. It's going to feature or star Dan White, Vincent Falcone, and Susan McRae. It's called Warm Heart, Cool Hands, The Making of a CD. So rather than the usual old boring stuff, we're going to have special boring stuff. No, none of that boring stuff. A special immediately following tonight's show, so stick around for that. All right, let's go back to Bobby Neer.
Thank you, Dave. From the very beginning of this series, we are told one thing, that Richard Kimball is innocent but can't prove it. The man who did it disappears, and there are no witnesses. Don't keep asking me, there are no witnesses. Oh, wait a minute. There's a whisper out there. There might be one, but that's in the future sometime. But if you can't find the guy who did it, and if he will never admit it anyway, what's the point? For 2 years, we watched Kimball chase a phantom. Then in season 3, the producers throw him a bone in the form of a man who was indeed at least traveling through the neighborhood and claims he saw the one-armed man, the one that Gerard claims he can't find anywhere. Kimball has his sister Donna on his side as always, but this time also a new and very savvy lawyer. Now if only the witness didn't have issues of his own to deal with. Trial by Fire, a fugitive classic, 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Fugitive. The Fugitive Views and Reviews, books 1, 2, and 3, are still available for sale on the Internet from Amazon and Barnes & Noble. By the end of this year, we expect to have our fourth and final book out in time for the holidays. So now is the time to catch up and have all three in your possession when the final one comes out. All three are on sale now at various Internet booksellers. Right now, before we conclude this episode, Kitty has 2 emails to read from 2 of our listeners. Kitty?
Okay, well, this first one is from Phil, and he says, I remember watching this episode for the first time about 25 years ago. This is one of those episodes that remained with me, and I was so thrilled to watch it again when I was fortunate enough to obtain a DVD copy of it. I thought this episode was well written and suspenseful throughout. Kimball trying to hide the note from the prison warden, sneaking into the drugs storage locker and just escaping by the skin of his teeth were awesome. The 2 cons that recognized him also added some thrills. Would they squeal on Kimball or not? I think it was an inspired choice to start season 3 with this episode after a summer of reruns. Just a great episode. And then from Linda, it says, this is one of my all-time favorite episodes. I can still vividly recall the first time I saw it, how the sight of those looming prison gates gave me chills, and how the tension built as I watched Kimball and the prison orderly walk a tightrope over the drug scheme and blackmail. I was so surprised when the orderly did help Kimball, despite the danger to his parole, deflated to think Kimball would actually supply the drugs, and totally panicked when Kimball, almost outside the gates, turned around and went back into the prison to make sure the orderly did not get blamed. Finding out the drugs were only water was the icing on the cake. Kimball's good turn in the beginning once again saved his life, as the girl he helped returned to offer him a ride. This was fugitive writing and acting at its best. A big thumbs up for the start of season 3.
Okay, Kitty, thank you very much. I'm going to give this back to Ken now to continue with his story about what happens afterwards, because he frankly does it better than I do. So, Ken, you can pick it up. And, of course, Kim was not only facing the fact that he might get exposed as who he is, but he's got these two prisoners who decide that rather than just turn him in, why not use him for a while and have him steal some drugs, get it to them. They can set themselves up in the drug business in prison, which does indeed take place in real life many times. My only question about that is that this seems like a stupid thing for them to do. Kimball is going to, if Kimball is found out at all, he's going to be there very temporarily anyway. If he gets away, he's going to get away, and he's going to steal. He's not going to steal enough drugs for them to keep them in the drug business for very long. So I don't know. Then on the other hand, if they had gone to the warden and said, "We know Richard Kimball's here," you think they would have gotten any kind of break on their sentence? I don't think so. What do you think?
Yeah, that storyline there, it was okay with me. With the these two prisoners wanting to get drugs, seems a little far-fetched to me. If I was them, I would turn Kimball in, and then, like you said, I read your review today, Bob. Like you said, if they do that, then maybe they'll get a little plus on their record. But that storyline, you know, played out all right. I think this was a, you know, I agree with the emails from our Phil and Linda that the acting and the writing was excellent. It really was, because it just kept you from scene to scene. Like I said, the scene between Mickey, which played by Greg Morris, and Kimball, you know, at first Mickey doesn't like Kimball. He's kind of resentful, but then as the story develops, you know, they kind of become buddy-buddy, and they help each other. And then in the end, he doesn't rat out on Kimball. That was a nice touch. Then you had the scenes between the warden and Kimball, and that was a little tense, and that was good. And then you had the scenes between the girl who comes in the room, and she's kind of gushing, you know, and then Kimball is just kind of standoffish, and, you know, he says, "Oh, yeah, 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 you're nice. And, you know, that was good. And then, you know, with the drugs and all that and the little tension, you know, you have the doctor and the nurse. Just all in all, you know, you're watching the episode, and it's thrilling.
Does he
and
use
how's
the name,
it gonna play out?
Does he use the name Kimball in the prison?
I don't think so.
I don't remember what his name is, actually.
You know, I think Kimball has a name in this episode, right?
He doesn't have a name?
Yeah.
He must have made up one when the reporters came in. They wanted to know who he was.
Oh, I'll have to watch that scene again. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember the name. It's just another one of his many aliases that he makes up on the spur of the moment.
Maybe he's just a number. You know how they do that.
I don't know. But he's got reporters in there on his back who want to take his picture and put it in the paper.
But, Bob, let me ask you, you know, if you were Kimball in that prison, you're hurt. Yeah. How are you going to get out? You know, that's what I kept asking myself. Hey, how's Kimball going to get out of here, you know?
Well, that's why you like the story so much.
Yeah.
Because in there, I went back and looked at our poll from that story, and all of the, nobody rated it below a 9. It's all 9, 9.5, and 10. That's because any story in the series which puts Kimball in a position where he simply can't get out automatically becomes more fascinating, except those episodes where they go overboard. In other words, it's a very fine line. If you go too far, then you're going to say, come on, this is ridiculous. But here they managed to walk right up to the line and say, look, here's the problem. He's in prison. He's been recognized. He can't tell anybody. He can't get out. He's injured. He's already inside a prison. How's he going to get out? How's he going to get past the gates? They're going to give you all those problems and then find a reasonable way for him to get out of it. Although at the end, Kimball does do his usual infuriating thing by insisting on going back and making sure Mickey's not in any trouble, and he ties up all the loose ends and just barely gets out through front gate. So, I mean, you know, he takes a lot of liberties with everything, kind of assuming that he's going to get away. That's a little bit far-fetched, but I think that's what really makes the difference in the story. It just doesn't go too far. Although I like the far-fetched stories, some of them are a little bizarre, and you think to yourself, how likely is it that he could have gotten out of that mess? Here's one that kind of ties it together and says, well, look a little bit to the side, and it almost seems as though he really could. I agree that the acting is rather low-key, and it is really very good. And it gives Jansen a chance to do what he does so well. And it's all just quite believable. Before we run out of time, I want to bring up some really bizarre connection between this story and an old TV series, and this comes out of Kitty's review, which is that, Kitty, I'm sure you remember that the nurse in this story that Kimball has to deal with is the woman who played Beaver's teacher in Leave It to Beaver, right?
Yes, she was Sue Randall, who played Miss Landers.
Right. And then we also have Helen Kimball, played by Diane Brewster, who was Beaver's first teacher.
Yes, Miss Canfield.
So there's a very strange, very bizarre kind of connection between Leave It to Beaver and The Fugitive. You couldn't find two stories that have less to do with each other. But it's a very, very odd thing. Well, anyway, it is excellent. Oh, and another thing I wanted to mention before we run out of time. Of course, who else but Richard Kimball could think to himself, how can I get out of this without the prisoners turning me in? He goes and he gets the morphine, but he opens the bottle and he puts water in there instead. Oh, I'm telling you. This guy is just too smart. He just can't be beaten. He can get around just about anything.
Isn't he the perfect white knight?
Oh, he is.
He saves the girl. He saves Mickey.
Exactly.
And puts water in the drug.
It's positively brilliant.
Don't you kill somebody if you inject them with water?
That's a very good
point. I believe
you
do.
Why would that kill you?
I believe that it does. I don't know. That's not.
Really? I never heard that.
I'm going to have to check on the internet about this.
All right, I suggest you try it, Bob.
You can take an injection of water and die over it?
You try it, Bob, and then we'll see. If you're here in 2 weeks, that'll prove the point.
No.
Okay.
No, I've never heard of such a thing. I mean, why would that happen?
I'll take it back. I guess it's if you get air.
Oh, an air bubble. Yeah, well, that would be true.
With this. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, yeah. I stand corrected, though.
Right, but all these people are already drug addicts, so they know how to do it right.
Okay.
But this episode stands out from all the other 120 because it's the only time that Kimball is in a prison. Am I right on that?
Well, he's in jail in Northoak.
He's in jail a lot, but a prison is different feeling.
Yeah. Remember, there's an episode, I don't remember which one it was, where he gets a ride. Truck driver drives him right up. The truck driver's going to a prison, remember?
Yeah.
The one where Andrew Prine was in it again.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
And he hitches a ride and he falls asleep again. There he is, falling asleep again. And he wakes up and what's in front of him? The truck is just about ready to go through the gate of a prison. So you're right. He does have a few close calls in which he's almost behind prison bars. But, you know, those are the most exciting episodes. Like I said, if you're writing for The Fugitive, you start with one basic. Put him anywhere where he can't escape. And then he's like Houdini. Say, okay, prove it. Prove you can get out of the most impossible place in the world.
And add some good characters in the story, like Greg Morris and Lynn McCarthy.
Right, right. Yes, it's absolutely excellent acting. And this is one of the top stories. They didn't know how to end seasons, but they knew how to begin them.
Yeah.
Because they did it here as they did with other seasons. It's a good ending a good beginning to season 3, just like season 2 had Man in the Chariot. And the pilot was very good. So, you know, you got to give them credit for that.
All right.
And they didn't know how to end it.
Credit we will do so. And I give you guys credit for doing a good job despite my contributions. I want everybody to stay tuned. KSAB special coming up. Real quick, what's going to be on in 2 weeks when you guys come back?
Trial by fire. Kimball finds a witness, but what can he do with them? That's the question.
Trial by fire. I like the names better than some of the episodes.
Okay.
All right. Good job. Thank you. We'll talk to all of you again 2 weeks from tonight. That will be the 29th. Talking Fugitive returns once again here on Sheravision Radio.
Looking into their eyes, I see them running through. Running out on empty, running on empty. Running out, running back, running out. Running into the sun while I'm running behind. Honey, you really tempt me. You know the way you look so fine.